good morning, everyone. Together with you, I'd like to make a further, more in-depth understanding of Sfirat HaOmer and its connection with counting the Shemitot and the Jubilee. So, we already explained, say it's only hinted at in some of the commentators, but I think if the way we analyze it, it goes into a bit more deeply. What is the meaning of the Omer, which we deduce from the first mention of Shabbos, the Chumash? Just to recap, that when it says the seventh day, that Hashem blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, this is a reference to the blessing and the sanctification created by the Mon. Which is really, the Mon is the first expression of how the Shabbos was shown in the material world. So we already explained the whole concept of six and seven, that six represents the physical world, or we call it the three-dimensional, which in the Tanakh is the six directions, same as three dimensions of the physical universe. And the Shabbat is, Shabbat Ve'Nafash describes the mind of God in nature. And we should recognize that all the physical aspects of life are dependent upon the spiritual will of the constant creator of the universe, Mechadesh B'Tuvo, Chol Yom Ma'aseh Bereishit. And this has to do with a similar situation which exists in the structure of the human being, because human beings created the image of God. Which means, just like God is the mind of the universe, so also each one of us has a physical universe, a physical body, which connects with the physical nature of the world around us. But all our physical senses, they really only exist to some extent because the human mind exists. It even goes into, you know, what's called theory of knowledge, ontology, that the picture we make of the world around us, on the one hand it comes through the concrete senses, on the other hand the picture is abstract, it's contained in the mind. But, I mean, this is the principle developed also by the greatest of the Greek philosophers, like Plato, makes a distinction between the external world and the inner world, the noumenal world, the world of phenomena, the world of noumena. Phenomena are the external aspects of the world around us. Noumena is the abstract image, and the truth lies in the abstract image. Well, to give you a simple example, there's a table in front of us. Each one of us, we only see part of the top of the table, a different part, a different angle. But all of us know that the table is not what we see. The table is a combination. If I look this way, I look this way, then I get a complete picture of the table by joining together the physical impressions of the senses. says the senses that work to create by a combination of the senses in the widest manner possible, we get the picture of the true table. And if we go a bit further, according to modern science, you know, we say that the table is solid, and so on, that's how it appears, solid. But if you start analyzing it under a microscopic investigation and other forms of investigation, we know all solids are made up of atoms, molecules in turn made up of atoms, and ultimately these atoms are pools of energy, and really it's not solid, to go into more deeply. Also the same applies to all aspects of measurement. You know, we all think we're sitting still here in this room, because that's the evidence of our senses, but in actual fact, we are moving an enormously swift speed, and we don't feel it. It's like a person in one of the most modern aeroplanes, he thinks he's stationary. And if he looks outside the window, he says, look at all things flying past. But it's not really the objects, the trees and the houses that are flying past. It's his aeroplane. So this is the concept that the truth lies in the seventh dimension, also by the human being. So that's what says, Shavat Vayina Fash. God rested, and then he appeared as the soul in the universe, just like the nefesh of the human being is the real ego. It's really the spiritual part. That's the essence of the human being that remains forever. And the evidence of the sense is something external. So we see this is the paradigm of how to understand life, given the first chapter of the Chumash. So we have to bring this into the concrete world. How? By celebrating the Shabbos. How do we celebrate the Shabbos? We make ourselves, all our activities which are creative, we stop doing them because we recognize they all come from the power that Hashem gives us to be creative in the physical universe. And we have to go to that root of our own personality which connects up directly with Hashem, which is the Nevesh. But the Nevesh is referred to also, it says, in other words, it is the Spirit of God, which is it's referred to metaphorically as the breath of God, the divine spark in each human being, which makes him a divine image, is his innate soul, which is bound up closely with God, who is the God of love and the God of the highest level of good qualities, which we should try to adopt in our lives. As it says, "Valachta midrachav," we've got to go in his ways. Ways of loving kindness. So, this is the essence of human being. So where do we find it? We find it in the physical situation of the people of Israel in the desert, when they were given bread from heaven. We'll discuss that in more detail. And then, how much, it wasn't called bread anymore, it was called Omer. Why was it called Omer? We went into this more thoroughly. Omer is really just a measure. And the root of the word Omer means to bind. And most probably, like nearly all words in Hebrew, with a concrete aspect and a symbolical aspect. The concrete aspect is the root Omer means to bind together. And it's used, some of you may know it, from the 39 Melachot of Shabbat, Ma'amer, which means to take together a stalk's ears of grain into a bundle, to bind them together. So the concept is, from point of view of measurements, because it says in the Parsha of the Mun, La'om asirit ha'efahu, says it's assumed the tenth of an ephah, which equivalent to a few kilos of grain, which can be made into bread and cakes. That is the amount that, generally speaking, was produced when they were harvesting and they made heaps and bound together ears of grain in order afterwards to go through the procedure of separating the actual grain from the stalks and the chaff, it produced more or less the amount that a person needs for his daily sustenance. So that was the amount that was given to every person. Only what happened was, the Omer, which came from the Mon, we explained also why it's called Mon, because we've got to regard physical life, food and every other aspect of physical life, as our portion that's given to us by the Creator. That's how the word is described frequently in the Tanakh, and especially in the Book of Tehillim. Hashem menot chalki. Hashem is menot chalki. It's the portion that is divided to give to me. Each person is given his portion. And this goes together with the concept, who is the richest person? Is the person who's able to be happy with his portion. And the portion that is given does not create for him neither a feeling of loss, because he says, that's what Hashem has given me, now I'm happy with it, nor a feeling of jealousy, why do others have more? So therefore, he's able to live a physical life with constant happiness. And that was a concept that the mana, the portion of one that was given, if someone took more than was his portion, or the portion for each member of his family, it became rotten immediately. And if it seemed to be too little, it filled up immediately what he and his family required. And then when it came to Shabbat, they were given a double portion for the Shabbat, on the end of Shabbat, and they should use that to prepare for the Shabbat. So this is why, that's why it's called Omer. And going into it more deeply, a person can only achieve the concept of being happy with this portion if he exercises self-discipline against the initial hunger which is put into the human being at birth already, that the only way he knows he can survive, if he takes hold of everything that he can whenever he's hungry or thirsty. And these are deep instincts that then also go into the concept, I want to take things to give me pleasure. That's why when, even a baby, when it's young, it grabs hold of different things. First it puts them to its mouth, then it starts playing with them. It thinks everything around me is in order for self-preservation. I've got to preserve myself, as long as I've got my mother's breast, and afterwards whatever I can get from others, what food I can get, and it's all for me. So, and that's part of the necessity to survive in this world, is the physical desires that we have are a basis for being able to survive life. It's a struggle for existence. In the struggle for existence, however, you can feel constantly that you don't really have enough. Maybe you've got enough food, then you say, well, I don't have enough money. Maybe I've got enough money, maybe I don't have enough companies and houses. Maybe I've got enough companies and houses, but I don't have a place on the Forbes list. And so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. Then it brings a person even, can even happen apparently to religious Jews. It says, I've got to have the nicest house, most expensive house in the world, as one of the billionaires was described recently. Happens to be Jewish, it's a bit of a political problem, because this arouses jealousy amongst others, and sometimes brings people from other nations to be a bit hostile. So that's what's happening. It happens to all of us in different ways. One person says, oh, it's not so much these things I need, but I need fame. I need everybody to talk about me, to appreciate me. I need to have an even unemployed people who are experts in publicity to build up my image. You know, I should be the most suitable person to run the country, or to run the company, or whatever. So they feel that I don't have enough, I need more. So they're constantly missing something. We say, no, if you follow the way of the soul, it's Omer. self. Omer means bind yourself. It means to bind, make your physical instincts, make them into servants for your higher spiritual and moral nature, which will bring your whole life to a far higher level of happiness. And not only happiness, what's Sameach b'chelcho? Sameach is Sameach. You want to grow. You want to grow beyond the animal level. Or you may be a very intelligent animal. You may be a very successful two-legged animal. But you're still an animal as long as you are enslaved to your physical instincts. Just like the animals are. The animals can't change. They're enslaved to them. So you've got to work hard. You've got to bind yourself, commit yourself, and you go and make, whether it's your inner drive for hunger or substance addiction, whether it's your inner drive for drinking a lot, whether it's your inner drive for sex, whatever it is, control it. Make it your servant and channel it. Don't destroy it. No, Hashem gave it for a good purpose. With your double heart, the sages say, you've got to serve Hashem with Shnei Yitzarecha, with your Yitzar Hatov, obviously, but not so obvious with your Yitzara, the materialistic instinct, can be made, with, as we say in the Tefillah, please bind our inclination to serve you, to serve Hashem. Then we reach the highest level. That's Omer. So the Omer is very significant. And it was shown that the Shabbat teaches us this lesson. Each Jew who observes the Shabbat, he is carrying on the principle of the Omer in his life. So now, when you come to Eretz Israel, there's no longer anyone doesn't fall from heaven anymore on the shop. Yeah? You've got to go and work, you've got to harvest, sow and harvest. So the Torah says that when you come to Eretz Israel, then it says, Meshavta Haaretz. Now, the purpose of Eretz Israel as being chosen to be the place where we should show the power of the Torah as a nation, not just as individuals wandering in the desert, but as a nation and as a state, is to show how on this globe it's possible also that the whole of the national life, in all its physical aspects, which have to do with security, have to do with the economy, have to do with agriculture, where it should all be also subjected in the same way to the spiritual and moral purpose. That's the Kedusha of Eretz Israel. That's why it says, it's an introduction to all the mitzvot in general, and especially mitzvot Tlu'ot Ba'aretz, it's the land, Asha'ani Noten Ibnei Israel, I'm giving it to you, because you've got to show in the land that you can run a state which is based upon spiritual and moral principles. And also this state should be a catalyst in changing the whole world, where ultimately all nations will live in peace. And when the concept of competitive struggles, the struggle for security, for economy, for all aspects of national life, should all be subjected to higher moral and ethical values. So how can you run the state that nature? You've got to recognize also that it's given to you for that purpose. And therefore, just like in the desert, the Shabbat demonstrated the power of Hashem as a supernatural sign of how to reach a high level of moral and spiritual perfection, when you as a nation come to Eretz Israel, the same thing will apply with the Shemitah. Now if you analyze what it says about the Shemitah, so it's quite similar on a national scale But instead of the 7 days in the Shabbat, 6 days in the Shabbat was a miracle in the desert. Similarly, you're going to have 6 years when you do ordinary physical activity as a country, both in agriculture and in industry and in arrangements for capital possessions. This all takes place for 6 days. You come to the seventh, then you find laws that you're not allowed to do any work at all. And of course the question is, from a natural point of view, that means the destruction of the economy of the state. But if everything ceases all of a sudden, you can't carry on. So Hashem says, same as in the desert, you had extra on Friday to help you for Shabbos. Similarly, you're going to have extra in the sixth year, and it'll last still for 3 years. Why? Because if you can leave the whole land fallow for 1 year, then the post-Shemitah, you also won't have any harvest. You can't do harvesting in the Shemitah, and you can't do sowing in the Shemitah. And therefore you won't even have anything for the eighth year. So Hashem says, never mind, I'll give you enough. And see? Because it's a repetition of the same miracle in the desert. You can have the same miracle on a national scale in Eretz Yisrael. So this is also the explanation given by one of the commentators, why at the beginning of yesterday's parsha, it mentions the Shemitah of Har Sinai. In order to tell you, we know at Har Sinai, how did Am Yisrael manage to live? Even before they received the Torah. In the desert, there was no food. In that time, it was also not possible to get food from merchants in other countries at the time. So the people were starving. So how did they survive? Through the month. And on the Shabbat, there was a miracle. So therefore, just like at Har Sinai, which is in the Midbar, and because of the sin of Am Yisrael, they were in Midbar for 40 years. All that time, they survived because of the miracle of the Mon. So now you're going to go to Eretz Yisrael, you'll be able to survive because of a similar miracle. And this time, the miracle will be the seventh year. So I'll give you enough beforehand, which can, so you can see it in front of your eyes. And if you're not going to keep this concept, then you have to go into Golos. Because the whole purpose of Eretz Yisrael is to demonstrate that Hashem gives you the physical means to dedicate every physical aspect of the country, means the economy, agriculture, security, also to Hashem. And you shouldn't come to the country and say, well, I'm successful here, everything grows and everything's fine, but a good economy, good agriculture. And you'll say, it says in the Chumash, it's my strength and the power of my hand that have produced this success. If you're getting Hashem, if you do that, if you get Hashem by not doing the Shemitah and the Yovel, also connected with it, it comes soon. So therefore, to demonstrate the hand of Hashem. And today, when we've come back to Eretz Yisrael, and Hashem has given us all these signs, we can go a stage further, because we see the providence of Hashem. And it's the people who keep the Shemitah who are keeping the stamp of Hashem on Eretz Yisrael. And also, Hashem is showing us you can't call it a complete open miracle, but it's close to it. If a plague of locusts comes upon Eretz Yisrael, and the locusts, they go and, this is well known, when they come in their big swarm to a field, and there's crops on the trees on the ground, they don't leave it till it all consumed. And there were plagues of locusts in many places, and when they came to a field where they kept Shemitah, the locusts turned back. And also every Shemitah, there are situations, I don't know exactly how it worked, but when we had the hail and the rain a few weeks ago, a late hail and rain, it destroyed the crops of those who don't keep Shemitah, and preserved and made it possible for those who didn't keep Shemitah to have a larger crop, which they can take when the late harvest comes. So it's all this Hashem is helping in different signs and teaching us this. I'm going to command my blessing on such an occasion. And as the Chatam Sofer says, why is the Har Sinai specifically the Shemitah? Because just like, or today we are not witnesses to the miracle of the Mon. That was only the 40 years of the desert. So either you believe what it says there, or you say, well, who says it's true? Or they try and give some other explanation about the Mon. Even if they can explain, it's a bit similar to some other things, but how can they explain that none came on Shabbos? I mean, so they'll say, well, that's what it says in the Chumash, you know. Chumash for us is the more that investigation grows, discovery grows, the more we see that the exact reports given in the Chumash. Still, people might deny it. But when they see the miracle of the Shemitah, they said the Torah couldn't have come from Moses. Moses isn't the one, just like Moses is not the one who can say that the mon should fall all the week. It doesn't fall on Shabbos. That obviously comes from the creator of the world. Similarly also, that the locusts should turn back, even until today, we can see a bit this miracle. In the hand of Hashem. And Hashem has promised. Who can promise, I'm going to give the blessing? Moshe can't do that. Only the one who provides all growth in the world, he can give it, nobody else. And therefore, the miracle of the Shemitah demonstrates the truth that the Torah was given to Moshe on Har Sinai by Hashem himself. There's no way you can push that away. Especially as the miracle of the Shemitah is continuing until today. But I want to add something else to it. Because if we think over all the prophecies that exist concerning the future of the people of Israel, and what might happen before the Mashiach will come. And that it's, look, the fact that the people of Israel are going back to their homeland, or it's promised in the prophets. But to imagine this will take place in the way that it did take place, is certainly the hand of divine providence. And it obviously came in fulfillment of those words. So, what do we see? That we were, according to halachic categories, so we don't have a full Sanhedrin, and therefore we can't go in for any war of conquest, but it was decided internationally that we should be permitted to build our life in Eretz Israel. But we had many enemies, and there were so many miracles that happened to stop the plans of our enemies who wanted to stop it, stop the people coming. And they fought against us diplomatically and militarily, and we had millions of our enemies who wanted us out of the Middle East, but Hashem preserved us in the War of Independence. I mean, even before the War of Independence. So we know that Mufti of Jerusalem and others together with his partner Hitler, they wanted to destroy all the Jews in Eretz Israel, and that them already in prepared death camps and everything. And also in a miraculous way, the far stronger army of Rommel, there were miracles that occurred that weakened them. I don't know if you know, one of the great miracles was that they were in the desert, ready to go and take over for the Muslim community, fundamentalists, take over the whole of Palestine and kill all the Jews that were here. We were a small minority and a very little defense at that time from any source, just the British mandate. They also thought they're too weak to against the huge army of Rommel, and Hitler took them away from the Russian front. And what happened is, they had pipes of drinking water, in order that they can carry on in the desert. And by mistake, through some mistake, seawater came. And look, they had, the whole army was down with dysentery. Then it was possible for Montgomery to go and push them back, to retreat. That was one of the miracles. In any case, then came the Six-Day War. At that time, Russia supported our Muslim enemies all around, who had a stranglehold on this little state. And we know the Six-Day War. Obviously, after 6 days, it's also Hashgacha. Hashem said, okay, you had 6 day war, now the 7th day is peace. But let it be a peace like the Shabbos. Let it be a recognition that it comes from Hashem. And in fact, there's nothing that had such an impact, more subconsciously than consciously, upon the whole of Jewry, than it was clear from every military angle the state of Israel was. It's already due to be destroyed entirely. But we survived. Even non-Jews, they said it's a miracle war. You can't explain it, how it happened. It must have been a power from above. And that produced the Tshuva movement in our time. That gave great spurt. It existed a bit before, but it gave great spur for the Tshuva movement. And if that time we would have, those who knew Torah would have done more, I'm quite sure we could have raised up most of Jewry to recognize that Hashem is the one who is leading Am Yisrael, you know, instead of carrying on as many did with the ignorance of Hashem, many of the kibbutzim. But then there came many other instances where divine providence was shown. It's going on all the time, until today. So, Eretz Israel is surely, it's also min ha-shamayim. I mean, every loyal citizen of Israel, they regard the flag, the menorah, as a national sign, and the flag of blue and white taken on tzitzis. And the purpose of Psil Tzachelet or Eternal Toy should see Hashem in everything that happens. Should recognize, if you look beyond the sky, look into the distance, then you'll see that Hashem is the one behind everything. And that's the blue and the white. And the Magen David is also the menorah on a plane. The menorah means the spiritual light of Hashem which comes through Torah. This is not just a symbol, but also the significance of the state of Israel, of the life of Jews in Israel today. So we can say that the Six-Day War was also like the same pattern. 6 days, you do your own hishtadlot, then Hashem will give a power of teshuvah. Shabbat is also time of teshuvah. Turn everything to Hashem now as a state. That's what we have to fulfill. In the post 6 day war existence of the Jew Israel, then came, it's insignificant, then came the Yom Kippur War, which is referred to in the annals of contemporary history as Eridat Adama, as an earthquake, because almost 3,000 soldiers were killed. It's a very difficult, slippery slope of Yom Kippur.
And unfortunately, we failed. But we hope that things will change. But we see this going on all the time. So therefore, we see that the concept of Shemitah enters as a continuation of the concept of the Shabbat for the state of Israel, for the people of Israel in our own country. That's its purpose. Have you got any questions on this? So I think we can go a step further if you analyze these matters more deeply. We know that in yesterday's Parsha, we had the dinim of Shemitah and the dinim of Yovel. Now, the major difference, if you go into it deeply, is developed by the Meshech Chochmah, hinted at by the Tzadok HaKohen, but also developed more by Shemir Dvinsk, Meshech Chochmah. He says like this. There's a basic distinction between the Shemitah and the Yovel. What is it? First of all, is there Jubilee now today?
No.
Why not?
They lost the camel. They don't know what it is.
Well, that's not the reason. They lost the count. There are different ways of counting it. Machlokes are in the Gemara, whether the Yovel is, let's say, is part of the Shemitah, or whether it's in addition to the Shemitah. But I mean to say, the Rambam, as always, he makes decisions. Decision that you can count when the Yovel should have taken place, but the Yovel wasn't observed. But what's the difference when it is observed? It can't be observed today, mainly because it can only be observed if all the tribes of Israel are represented. And therefore, it can only come again when we have Elijah and others, or when we have the Sanhedrin, who will reintroduce it. But meanwhile, we don't have a Sanhedrin. We have said the Sanhedrin today, it has no sources in Jewish tradition, the Sanhedrin today. So there's no Yovel, but when there is a Yovel, what's the difference?
Everybody's land goes back to him, and all the slaves are free. There's freedom and liberty.
Yes, and there are really three special laws that apply to the Jubilee, but don't apply to the Shemitah. One of them is, like you say, is that all forms of slavery that exist, they go free, the person. Then, all arrangements that we made with regard to real estate, we say it all goes back to the original owners. The original owners also, this is part of the principle of Yovel, means for Yovel you have to re-establish different areas for different tribes that we can't do today because we don't even know who's from which tribe. But when the Mashiach will come, it will be rearranged, as described in Yechezkel. There will be a reallocation of land, and in the Jubilee year everything will go back to the original owners. That means people can only own land for a maximum of 49 years. As you know, this is based also on the 49-year lease, which is today called leasehold of real estate all over the world, been accepted from this law in yesterday's Parsha. However, there's a third aspect. It's like this. The Shemitah is something fixed. The Gemara goes with this thoroughly. The Shemitah, we have a clear record of which should be the Shemitah.
and it does not require any statement of Kiddush. If you look at the part of Kiddush Tem Shnata Chamishim, it doesn't say Kiddush Tem Et HaShmita. Kiddush Tem, the 50th Jubilee year, has got to be declared by the best name. You should count. Also, there's a law that the Besdin, it's got to be a recognized proper Besdin, they have to count, and then they're the ones who have to fix when the Yovel should take place. But when there's no Sanhedrin, you can't do that. In this is different from the Shemitah, but the Shemitah is fixed. You don't make a previous announcement. Can you tell me, is there a similar distinction with regard to the festivals of the year? To understand this more deeply. Do we have such a distinction? Do we have such a distinction that in order to fix, do you have to fix when the Shabbos will be?
Shabbos is not the sixth Shabbos.
Don't fix Shabbos. Shabbos is a fixed day.
Leap month, leap year.
But the leap year is fixed by whom? By whom is the leap year fixed? Who fixed the leap year?
Sanhedrin.
And what about the other Yom Tovim? Who fixes them?
So we don't have Sanhedrin anymore. We don't have Sanhedrin anymore, you said.
We don't have a Sanhedrin.
So how can they fix
that? So how can we today fix leap years? There's no Sanhedrin. Good question. But it goes further. If you look in Parshat Emor, which is Parshat a week ago, we described all the festivals. So first it says about the Shabbos, Shabbos Yilochem. And then it says, Eile Moadei Hashem, Asher Tikru Otam Mikrei Kodesh. These are the meeting times with Hashem, the Moadim, which you should fix. You have to fix them. Who's you? That you've got to declare.
Congregation.
Who's you?
The Assembly of Israel.
And who represents them?
The Zekanim.
The Sanhedrin. So how come we have festivals today? There's no Sanhedrin.
They're already fixed for very years along.
Like this.
From the moon.
First of all, I'll go to the root of the matter a bit better. The bracha we say on each Shabbos, the main bracha in the Amida is Mekadesh HaShabbos. And when it's a festival, what do we say?
Mekadesh HaShabbat Yisrael Ve'amodim.
Yeah, well, let's say no Shabbos, then you'll say Mekadesh Yisrael Vazmanim. So why do you say Mekadesh Yisrael? Why on Shabbos you don't say Mekadesh Yisrael?
Because we don't need to say that. Because
why not?
Because the congregation makes the holidays. But where's Shabbat? Everybody knows it's going to be Shabbat. You can decide yourself.
Hashem sanctified Israel to sanctify the time. Who sanctifies the nations. That's the order. Shabbos is the first thing which was sanctified by Hashem. Then Hashem sanctified also Israel. Israel has as a task to sanctify the time. And the time, and Israel will sanctify also the nations by this. But the time is set for the whole world actually.
Well, the Gemara discussed this, says like this. They say, Shabbos kavir v'kayim. Shabbos is fixed from the beginning of creation. From the beginning of creation, the Shabbos has been known as a tradition. And even the time of B'nai Noach, then the Avot, they also knew when the Shabbos, and so it is throughout creation. As if there were, you know, there was a more than 100 years ago, there was a big battle that they wanted internationally to, I think, to add a day or to subtract a day. And so the Rabbonim got together and said, we don't want the world to change the calendar. Because if you change the calendar, it'll be confusion which day is Shabbos. And we know by tradition, when is Shabbos? We can't change the Shabbos. Shabbos is fixed. There's no Sanhedrin that can change the Shabbos. It's fixed. But the festivals are called Mo'adim. Here we have to have a meeting time between Hashem and the representatives of Am Yisrael, because Hashem wants Am Yisrael to meet him halfway. We've got to work out the date. When the festivals take place is dependent on what the Sanhedrin decide. And therefore, until today, we've had some say, what does it depend on to fix the Moed? How long, since we have a lunar calendar, yeah? So how long is the month, approximately?
29 or 28 days, 29 days.
29 and 3 quarter days.
Yes, astronomical month.
29 and 3 quarter days.
Yeah, well, it's a bit more than half, yeah. So it's 29 and plus half, it's 11, and more than half the day. So therefore, if we have a Rosh Chodesh, the Rosh Chodesh can either be on the 30th day, or on the 29th day. So, well, actually, Rosh Chodesh be either the 30th day or the 31st day. The month can either be 29 days or 30 days in order to make up for the half. So therefore, today we have a fixed calendar which was made by the last Sanhedrin, the time of Hero the Second, who lived in the 3rd century, 4th century of the Common Era. So Hero the Second, he had the last Sanhedrin, and then they fixed a calendar on the basis of a 19-year cycle, which they worked out astronomically. That means there's a 19-year cycle where there were some months are 29, some months are 30, and also some years are a leap year, 30 months, and some years not, because you've got to keep Pesach in the month of spring. And to do that, you've got to have some leap years. You know, because the solar calendar is in charge or follows the seasons. And also our lunar calendar's got to be in accordance with the seasons. Although we count the calendar according to months, because there's a difference of approximately 11 days between the lunar and the solar calendar. And therefore some said to have an extra month. And when was that fixed? By the last Sanhedrin. And they fixed it in such a way that it can give us the time of months every year until the Mashiach will come. So some say, the Rambam says this, the din is that the fixing of the times has got to come from Am Yisrael. It's got to come from Am Yisrael in Eretz Yisrael. Because that's Ki Mitzion, Teitzei Torah. From there, we have also the laws concerning time. So the Rambam says there's always got to be some Jews left in Eretz Yisrael in order for the festivals to represent Am Yisrael. But even if there's no Sanhedrin, the Sanhedrin arranged it beforehand, then it's applicable. Now I'll tell you this, some say, you know, in all shuls, the Shabbos before Rosh Chodesh, what do you have in the service? You have a special bracha to be said for the coming month. So some say the importance of Birchat HaChodesh is closely connected with each kehillah, also expressing and announcing when will be Rosh Chodesh, which is a substitute, but we don't really have a Sanhedrin. So it should still represent Am Yisrael. From all this we see, and that especially from the Nusach of the Bracha, that Mora says, Shabbos Kri L'Kaima, but all festivals are not fixed by Hashem alone. They're fixed through the people of Israel. Through the people of Israel, also, who are connected with the land of Israel. And therefore, the essence, the inner essence of the festivals is that it's got to come from us. Now, I'll tell you where this is interesting, but here I'm going to show you how this is inherent in the Zohar and in all the more mystical discussions. You say like this, the connection we have with Hashem is called it arutha de'le'ela, it or chemilmala. Hashem gives spiritual power from above to Am Yisrael. But there's also another important aspect, it ororot de'le'tata. There's got to be a spiritual power coming from the people of Israel, from us from below. So you say like this, the word Shabbat represents the spiritual power that's given us from above on every Shabbat and in every Shemitah, because it's fixed. What do you mean it's fixed? It's 6 days physical activity, man. Seventh day, a spiritual power that produced the power in the desert that came from above. No man, no bread, nothing from above, but the people were able to survive spiritually. Shemitah the same. No work in the country, but Hashem through his spiritual power gives blessing for the 3 years. So that's all a spiritual power from above. Now, when it comes to the festivals, it's got to be combined with the spiritual power that comes from below. Moed means when two sides meet together. Hashem says, I'll come to you, but only if you come to me. Therefore, Shabbos is Mekadesh HaShabbos, but festivals, Mekadesh Yisrael. He gives Kedusha to Am Yisrael, and Am Yisrael have to use that Kedusha to create the Zmanim, the Moadim. Therefore, festivals are dependent upon the Sanhedrin, the expression of Am Yisrael. But Shabbos is independent of Sanhedrin. It lies in nature. Shemitah, the same. Shemitah is called the power from above. Hashem gives the blessing from above. It doesn't need Kedusha, but Yovel, it said all the time, V'kidashtem, Eishnat, you've got to, you, the Sanhedrin, have to sanctify the Jubilee year. So although I didn't see that the Meshe Chochma quotes the Zohar, as do many of the Hasidish Sforim like Rabbi Tzadok HaKohen, also I think it's well known, the Tfas Emes is based a lot also on the Maral's concept, from Moshe Chaim Lutzato, but it's really the same principle. And from that, if we go into that, tomorrow I'll give further shiur on this, from that we can better understand also the deeper significance of the counting of the Omer is from when? Mochot HaShabbat. You know, it's from the Mor of the Shabbat, which the Sadducees, what's HaShabbat mean?
They took it literally and said it's the real Shabbos, the Shabbos Kodesh, and not the Shabbat, which means Yom Tov, actually.
So the question is, if it's like we say in our tradition, it's the Yom Tov, not like the Sadducees, then why is it called a Shabbat? Because if you look at the Chumash, Yom Tov is nearly always called Shabbaton.
Yeah.
It's also a day of rest, but day of rest which is on a lower level,
because
it's fixed by the people of Israel. It's not something, it's not Orot Melmala, it's Melmata. Yeah?
Yeah.
So Shabbaton is a Yom Tov. So, why is Pesach here called Shabbat? So, on the basis of this shiur, you can understand it.
Zechelitzer
Mitzrayim. Maybe tomorrow.
Zechelitzer Mitzrayim. There is a strong